across lately. And thanks to all of you who have contributed. And to those of you who haven't, please think about it. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. Stay tuned for Mark, Bob a little later, John in the morning, Dr. Bill, the whole Head On Radio lineup.
This is the Quality News Network. Hurricane Dean struck Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula this morning as a powerful Category 5 storm. Dean has now been downgraded to a Category 2 hurricane and is expected to make landfall again on Wednesday along the Mexican coast. President Bush is in Canada today for the Quebec summit, meeting with Canadian and Mexican leaders. The heads of state have agreed on a mutual strategy to avoid crippling delays in border crossings during emergency situations such as a terrorist attack or natural disaster. Russian military officials want the Czech Republic to postpone a decision to accept a U.S. radar station. Moscow views the proposed missile intercept system as a threat and told Prague it would be making a big mistake if it agreed to go ahead with the plan, urging them to wait until another U.S. president is elected to decide. In Huntington, Utah, federal and mine officials are quickly losing optimism in the efforts to rescue the 6 miners trapped in a collapsed mine over 2 weeks ago. Efforts to reach the miners have resulted in no signs of life, insufficient oxygen supply, and the death of 3 rescue workers. 3 weeks before the long-awaited Iraq War report to Congress, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq has unusually strong words of criticism for the new government. Ambassador Ryan Crocker called progress on the national level in Iraq, quote, extremely disappointing and frustrating to all concerned. At a Quebec press conference today, President Bush expressed his frustration in Iraq Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. The president said that it is up to the Iraqi people, not American politicians, to decide whether to continue supporting the prime minister. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has set to rest speculation that he will throw his hat in the 2008 presidential ring. Bloomberg said today that he cannot win and will not run. The 65-year-old billionaire fueled rumors of a campaign by traveling the country recently to push his agenda. Reuters reports the number 2 man at the Pentagon has produced a memo establishing 25 goals to be accomplished before the end of the Bush administration. The list includes an expansion of elite military forces and a new strategy for detaining terrorism suspects. In Minneapolis, a 13th body has been recovered from the Mississippi River. Authorities say the remains belong to the last person listed as missing from the collapse of the Interstate 35 bridge earlier this month. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The space shuttle Endeavour landed this afternoon without incident at Cape Canaveral in Florida. The shuttle returned home a day early because of Hurricane Dean after 9 days in space delivering components and preparing the space station for lab modules. Researchers Monday established more evidence in the case that a cold virus could contribute to obesity. The study shows that stem cells, when exposed to a common virus, would turn into fat cells and store additional fat. If the theory is confirmed, a vaccine could be available in the next 5 to 10 years. A new study released in Spain yesterday says food prepared with olive oil may help prevent blood clots in those with high cholesterol. Olive oil is already thought to benefit the heart. The numbers of home foreclosures last month demonstrates a 97% jump from July last year. This July saw almost 180,000 foreclosures, last July 93,000. Apple's music download store, iTunes, is facing two new competitors today. MTV and Real Networks have announced plans for a joint venture in music downloads. Also today, Walmart has announced a new service selling music free from controversial digital rights management. Both will offer music at prices similar to those of iTunes. Light sweet crude is trading at $89.47 a barrel. Gold is trading at $666.20 an ounce. The Dow is down 31 points, NASDAQ up 13, S&P 500 up 2. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is the week in review. All topics are valid, and I've got a lot to talk about. It is August in Washington, and that means that I'm sitting in a ghost town right now. Everyone is at the beach except me. That includes policymakers as well. Heck, maybe our country can't get any worse when most of Washington is on vacation. It also includes all the lobbyists that are there hanging on. But there is a lot going on in the world and in Washington, and including among lobbyists. One of the things that lobbyists are really revving up to do, and in fact they've been paid more money to do than any other time in history, about $6 million over the last 6 months, $1 million a month, is to convince Congress to leave in a loophole which allows extremely rich billionaires to pay taxes at a lesser rate than minimum wage workers. Because we all know that minimum wage workers are clearly the people that need to be paying far more, a greater percentage of their wages in taxes. So they're paying $6 million to keep that loophole, and we're going to talk about that this hour. I also want to talk about the state children's health insurance program that George Bush has, in the quiet of August, decided to limit it, basically making sure that as few children get health care as possible in America. I still think he should take Jonathan Swift's modest proposal. If he were to bake poor children and let the rich eat them, then the rich would be better off. They'd get the delicacy, and the poor children could at least get health care until the day they are fattened and killed to serve to the rich. Meanwhile, they are trying to force another right-wing judge down our throats, Leslie Southwick. Do you know the details on him? The man that, we'll give the details. I don't want to use the N-word until it's absolutely necessary. But let's just say it plays a role in at least one of his rulings. And in general, he's the guy that looks out for corporations at the expense of the poor, just as you'd expect the Republican Party to do. Speaking of the Republican Party, more is coming out about the role of Karl Rove now that he's gone, and how he tried to turn the federal government into a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. Far more than has ever been done before. I will give you the details of that this hour. So as I said, there is a lot to talk about. I even want to mention Bloomberg and my gratitude at him for not running. He may call himself a Republican or independent, but his ideas are far more Democratic than others, which means that he, like Ralph Nader, would hurt the Republican Party. Would help the Republican Party, would hurt the Democratic Party, because he's too similar to that party, and I'm very glad he's not making a third-party run. Again, if you disagree, give me a call. Let me know why. Finally, I want to talk about Iran and the fact that I support designating Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist group. I do not support a war against Iran, but I do think that we've got to rev it up to stop them. Unfortunately, because of the war in Iraq, we're bogged down. We don't pose much of a threat at the time. That doesn't mean that Iran and North Korea are suddenly wonderful countries. They are not. They are doing some pretty awful things, and we need to stand firm against them. I am not a pacifist, and nor do I believe in unnecessary wars, but I do think that at some point what Bush did in Iraq has harmed American foreign policy for decades to come, because we can't take strong stands against anybody without looking like we're starting a preemptive war against a country that never attacked us. And speaking of Iran, many of you have been watching my American Dream show, which is on ATN, the Arabic Television Network, which comes out of Denmark, but does sell the show to Press TV, which is Iran's 24-hour English language news network. And I know some of you have questioned my decision or wondering why I'm doing it or praising me for doing it. If you want to call in and talk about that, that's okay, too. There's a lot to talk about this week. And if you have some other topic, one I haven't mentioned off the top, that you want to call in and talk about, here's your day to do it. Every topic is valid. Let's just have a discussion. It's the Week in Review. And you have the toll-free numbers, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. So let's just start one step at a time. And like I said, if any of the topics I talked about interest you or you got one of your own, feel free to call in. I do want to start on Wall Street because there's an obscure provision in the U.S. Code that allows billionaire hedge fund managers. Now, these are the people who make literally billions of dollars, not millions, billions of dollars. And what they're doing is basically, you know, buying and selling stocks. But they're not doing it the way you or I might do it, where we would get a capital gain. They're doing it as a living. This is how they earn their ordinary income. That's what they do every single day. They're hedge fund managers. They work for these huge, huge billionaires, and that's their ordinary job. That's how they're paid. Well, they like to take their taxes for the hundreds of millions of dollars and billions, indeed, that they make, and pay them at the capital gains tax rate, which is as low as 15% these days. Now, recall that if you are a waitress or a minimum wage earner or really any other ordinary wage earner in America or self-employed, whatever you are, you're paying at the higher rate, a rate that goes up to, 28, 31, 35%. Why is it that a minimum wage earner should pay twice the amount that a hedge fund earner makes? I want you to think about this because the Republicans sometimes say they want a flat tax. They want to charge everyone the same rate. They can't. They don't like the fact that if you earn more money, you have to pay a higher percentage of your income. They seem to think that if you make $10,000 a year, you can give up $5,000 just as easy as someone who makes $100 million a year can give up $50 million. But, of course, we know if you make $10,000 a year, that $5,000 may mean that you can't eat, you can't pay rent, you can't pay health care, you're out on the street. Whereas for someone who makes $100 million, $50 million, you can't even spend it all. I mean, it's all just about playing with your gold and counting the chips like on a poker table, because you can't spend that kind of money. Well, it turns out that when it comes to hedge funds and private equity funds, the billionaires literally pay a smaller percent than the poor. Minimum wage, again, you pay income taxes at the ordinary rates, middle-class people are already up there at least at 28%, often at 31%. But hedge fund managers are paying 15%. So they earn $100 million and keep $85 million, and somebody earning $50,000 has to pay, a third. It just doesn't make sense. Well, one thing about these loopholes is they're extremely lucrative to an extremely small number of people. And so they have now paid lobbying firms more money than has ever been paid to lobbyists before in a six-month period, literally $1 million a month, $1 million a month to persuade members of Congress to let them keep their hundreds of millions a year they make tax-free, courtesy of us fools who don't understand these complicated provisions, and we pay our full share of taxes while they pay half. Just think about it, though. If they can afford $1 million a month, how much this, $12 million a year just lobbying on it. Think how valuable this kind of thing is. And think what kind of weird mindset it takes a Republican to defend the super rich paying half percentage of taxes that those middle-income, lower-middle-income people pay. So it's indefensible, and I'll bring this up with Mike Lane one day, and he'll tell us, oh, well, they're capital gains, and so capital gains. This isn't you and I with a farm. These are people who make a living off of playing with other people's money, and for them, like I said, it's just an accounting thing. All right, what else? Well, we've also got the denial of poor children's health care. I don't know. To me, this sort of goes hand in fist with the Wall Street issue. It's the same idea. Just as the rich should pay less taxes than the poor, the Republicans say, poor children shouldn't get health care in America. I mean, where do you think we are? Do you think we're a first world country? Do you think we're an industrialized nation? Do you think we're a nation that's able to have doctors? No way! Come on, we are Upper Volta. We are Botswana. We can't afford to pay for our poor children's health care. Not when Dick Cheney would have to give up his seventh yacht. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. Are you telling me that they'll only be able to have, I don't know, caviar every hour instead of every minute? Are you telling me that, oh my God, the golden toilet seats, they'll only have to have six in a mansion instead of 10? If you have to provide health care for poor children. Now, you know, there are different ways to pay for it, and I frankly like the idea of taxing smokers. I know Bob and others don't like that idea. But in general, however you get the money, I'd tax the rich. That's fine by me. Are we really a nation that is saying that poor children are just going to die because they're poor? Well, according to George Bush, that's exactly right. And in fact, he has specifically limited by executive order all he could the reach of health insurance, because I guess he wants to show that when it comes to harming poor children, America will not take second place to any industrialized nation in the world. As I said, it is the Week in Review. If you want to call in and talk about any of the topics that I've raised or any topic of your own, it's easy to do. The toll-free number, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
I'm getting so sick of hearing people try to minimalize what's going on. And China's up to it now, too. This idea that, you know, we're going to try and make moves, but not at the detriment to our economy. Hello! How many times do I have to say this? No planet, no economy. No planet, no business. No planet, no commerce. Drives me absolutely insane! And like I said last week, we have George W. Bush pressuring the G8 to soften their language while at the same time making public statements to tell the G8 to get with the program. Excuse me? What bloody planet are you on?
Join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, 10 to 11 a.m. weekdays, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Those people I know.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review, talking about everything from Wall Street trying to protect us a nice tax break to cuts in children's health insurance to Iran to judicial nominees to Rove making the Republican Party own the White House as usual to Bloomberg not running to actually one of the things I do want to definitely talk about is the wiretapping memos that wound up in Dick Cheney's office. There's some news out on that today. So we're going to get to all of that and also to whatever you want to bring up. The toll-free number is 877-443-2366. Before I get to the phones, I do want to mention one more thing about the S-CHIP program. That's the State Children's Health Insurance Program. You probably know of the congressional plan to increase funding for poor children to get health care. They would use it by raising the tobacco tax and also by cutting some of the subsidies that the government gives insurance companies to carry Medicare that they don't need and Medicaid. What you may not, and you probably know that Bush plans to veto that. That's actually not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is these new Bush policies that were announced today that says that states can't give poor children health care under this program, even if they want to, unless, number one, a kid has to be uninsured for a year. So a kid has to go 1 year without health insurance. It's very, very important that we insure less children in America. So we have to make sure that a child risks, you know, if they get leukemia between that year, they have to die, because that's what America's all about, letting children die. That's what we believe in. Not fetuses, my friends. No. We have to protect every single blastocyst. We have to protect tons of frozen embryos. Children, however, are required to die. This is America. That's the rules. So they have to be one uninsured year, and the states have to make sure that 95% of their population is part of a Medicaid or a state health insurance program, 95% of their poor population. Now, that part is all well and good and sounds fairly harmless until you realize that this requirement that 95% of these children that are under 200% of the poverty line be signed up for Medicaid or for state health insurance programs, how many states have met this burden? In other words, how many states would be able to get the money from the S-CHIP program under Bush's new statute? What do you think? 48 states? 45 states? 40? 30? 20? 10? 5? 2? If you said 1... you've named too many. Because not a single state or the District of Columbia, not a single jurisdiction in the United States of America has met this 95% provision. It's very, very hard to register all the poor people in America, particularly when they're trying just to stay alive. I mean, tracking down the homeless ain't so easy either. Again, I support doing it. But to say that we're not going to allow children to have health care unless children already have health care is exactly backwards. So what Bush is saying is this: too many kids have health care in America. That's what he's saying. We need to make sure kids have less health care before we provide them with more. We're not going, this program, which began in 1997, by the way, under Bill Clinton and a Republican Congress, is designed to help children who are not quite poor enough to cover Medicaid, but they aren't rich enough to afford insurance on their own. It serves 6.6 million children in America today. Okay? What Bush is saying is too many children have insurance in America. And unless they go with a year without it, and unless we can make sure that no one needs it, we can't provide it. Now, if that sounds like faulty logic, then you understand exactly what the administration is trying to do. And sometimes you just have to go into the details to truly understand what the administration is trying to do. 877-443-2366. Dave from California, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. It's just that kind of thing right there. that if you ever find yourself in agreement with Bush or Cheney on anything, you better take a second look at it because you're almost
sure
on the wrong side. And I would say that the PNAC crowd that you know well about that planned their events for the Middle East years ago.
Project for New American Century.
They had the intention of getting not only Afghanistan and Iraq, but they should well be in Iran and Syria by now. They're behind, and it's frustrating to some of them. They want to make it out on the right-wing talk that Iran is a big danger, a threat to us and to the Middle East. And the history of Iran is they've never attacked anybody, and I don't think they have any plans of doing it. And it would be lethal if they took on the United States or Israel.
Well, let me say this. When you say Iran's not attacked anybody, they do sponsor a tremendous amount of terrorist attacks that do kill and do kill innocent civilians, whether it's the guard in Iraq. I mean, one of the main things that's killing our soldiers, and I do believe this is true, is explosives that are made in Iran. Now, don't get me wrong. Another thing that's killing our soldiers is explosives made in America because we are funding insurgents incompetently, pretending that you know this is going to actually going to be on our side, but then they take our weapons and use them against us. So, but I guess the only difference is that we are stupidly, unintentionally killing our own troops, but Iran is doing it intentionally. And here's my thing when it comes to Iran. First of all, I make a huge distinguishing difference between the government of Iran and the people of Iran. I know from lifetime experience that the people of Iran actually tend to be some of the most pro-American people in the Middle East. They're Persian, they are not Arab, and they tend to be more at ease with America. It's a very young population. Most of them, I think, have forgiven us our incredible, horrible things we did, which was overthrowing their democratic leader Mossadegh in 1952 and installing the Shah and teaching his Savak police how to torture people. Now, Shah was very, very good to the United States, but he was very, very bad to most people in Iran. And yet, ever since the overthrow of the Shah, the theocracy hasn't been so good to the people of Iran either. They elected, in fact, a reformist president in a legitimate election, Khatami, who we didn't deal with when we should have in the early part of this decade. It was a ridiculous, wrong thing to do because now we have a true crazy person. But I don't think Ahmadinejad's in control of Iran, and I don't think many Iranians do either. It's clearly the same theocracy, the same Ayatollah, Khamenei, and others that's in charge. But here's the thing. There are dangerous dictators out there. Frankly, I think Iran was always more dangerous than Iraq. North Korea is dangerous. Syria is dangerous. These are countries that are dangerous and do mistreat their own people. Now, do I think we should invade them all and reinstall their governments? No, absolutely not. In fact, one of the problems with our invading Iraq on a purely strategic basis, not to mention humanitarian basis, I did a show yesterday talking about all the Iraqi civilians that have been killed because of what we did. But on a purely strategic, even realpolitik basis, if you put all your eggs in one basket, you can't, use your weapons to defend yourself elsewhere. So I actually supported sanctions against Iraq. Maybe some people didn't. And I support sanctions against Iran. I do not think it would be good for the Middle East or the world for Iran to develop nuclear weapons. Now, that does not mean I support invasion right now, but it also doesn't mean I support doing nothing either.
Well, you occasionally invite a difference of opinion, and you certainly will get one from me on that. I've known a number of Iranian people that I've held in very high regard.
Me too.
I think they will look with suspicion towards the United States today because this country has proven that it will invade other countries on total fabrication. And
that's true.
Right next door to them. And I think they look upon that with grave suspicions.
Oh, I think they do too. I think they do too. I think our war in Iraq has caused incredible harm and damage to America and how we're viewed around the world, and it will take decades to come out of that. But all of that being true, I still think that we shouldn't simply sit back and allow Hezbollah to be funded and killing civilians, or frankly, these particular IEDs, improvised explosive devices that are supplied by Tehran and killing our soldiers. I don't think we can overlook that. at the same time. I mean,
you know, Mark, very well, you know that the people that are telling us that are known to lie an awful lot.
Well, that's true.
The White House will try to do anything they can to build us ill will towards Iran.
That's true. But, I mean, the Europeans are saying, I mean, I don't believe that Iran is not arming these people. I mean, if that's true, you know, if there's countervailing evidence, I'd like to see it. I'm trying to be judicious about this. Even the Europeans will talk about Iranian arming, and certainly Iran is not backing down on its nuclear ambitions. Now, I understand why they have nuclear ambitions. I understand that, frankly, with America throwing its weight around the world, we actually increase the incentive for countries like North Korea and Iran to go nuclear. I get that, too. I get all of that. But I also understand that frankly, it would not be good for anyone in the world if Iran were to obtain nuclear weapons. It wouldn't be good for us. It wouldn't be good for any other country in the region, and it wouldn't even be good for Iran. So I do think that whatever we can do to encourage them not to do that is a good thing, even if it requires things like sanctions.
Well, you know, I think they tend to be a lot more honest than what we have for a government right now, and they're claiming that their only purpose is to be able to have nuclear energy for electricity power and such, that they are not even working on the same type of uranium that would be necessary to construct a weapon. And
I don't buy that because, you know, I mean, Iran has cheaper oil than just about any country on Earth. Perhaps only Saudi Arabia and Iraq have cheaper oil than Iran, and I'm not even sure about Iraq. When you have oil that's that cheap and you're not using it but using a far more expensive thing for them, it doesn't make sense. I think they're trying to obtain nuclear weapons, and I think, frankly, their own government will say that at times by some of their more crazy people in the government, like their president, have admitted that that's, you know, what they want it for. So I think they are on the road. Now, I don't think it's going to happen around the corner. I don't think it's going to happen in the next 6 months. But at the same time, that's why, again, I think we have to try these non-force, these kinds of diplomatic sanctions, which after all brought South Africa to its knees. Frankly, they brought Iraq to its knees, despite the cheating that occurred by all kinds of government. It really did harm Saddam Hussein. And I think we have to use diplomatic sanctions, frankly, because I don't want to have to use force. So
I like your thinking on it, Mark, most everything. I do feel on this one, if I'm hearing something from Bush or from Cheney or from Limbaugh or any of that ilk, I would think, well, it's possible. This could be the very first time they've ever told the truth about anything.
Yeah, no, it's not based on them. It's not based on them. I'm talking about the Europeans. I'm talking about IAEA. I'm not saying it's around the corner, but clearly it's something that I think we have to look into. Just as, frankly, I wish that we had kept what we promised North Korea under the Clinton Treaty. I mean, under Clinton, North Korea did not develop nuclear weapons. We had a treaty, and the treaty was both carrot and stick, but it included inspectors. We were there. We were watching them, and they didn't create the nuclear weapons. Then Bush calls them this great enemy and basically leaves them alone, and now they have nuclear weapons. And that's not good for anybody, that Kim Jong-il has nuclear weapons. Way to go, George Bush. And then at the end of the day, he basically reinstates the Clinton deal, kind of, you know, closing the barn door after the horse has escaped. It's that kind of threat that I don't care. I think we could have kept North Korea from getting nuclear weapons, not by calling them the axis of evil, but by the same package of carrots and sticks that Clinton used. And that's all I want to use with Iran. By the way, not just sticks, but carrots too. I would offer Iran full diplomatic recognition. We are talking with them right now, which is a good thing, finally, after all these years. And I would offer them full diplomatic relations. I would offer them trade agreements if they would give up their nuclear program and take steps to allow real democracy there. And frankly, even the democracy part, you know, Saudi Arabia is no democracy, and they're our close ally, mainly just to stop the nuclear weapons. And so it's not just sticks. I would offer carrots, too, and I think Iran would be wise to accept those carrots.
You know, when Canada, Belgium, most of Europe is asked, why do you not perceive a threat from these countries? They say because we do nothing to cause them to hate us.
That's true.
And that we cannot say.
That's true. No question about it.
Great program as always, Mark.
Thanks for calling in, Dave. I appreciate it. Folks, we're going to take another break, and I do want to talk about the other topics, though any topic is valid. It is the Week in Review. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Head-On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. For most Americans, this will come as no surprise. You're still earning less today in real terms than you were back in 2000. But now the stats are in, and they don't provide any solace. This is the worst things have been since the end of World War II, as far as declining wages go. Meanwhile, those making $1 million or more who are in the top 0.25% of Americans accounted for 47% of the total income gains from 2000 to 2005. This is redistribution of income at its most inverted and lopsided. It's neither natural nor just. No, this tilt and bloat follows directly from the Bush administration policy. His investment tax cuts gave more than $21 billion, get this, to the top 0.001% of the population. Those in the bottom 90%, well, you averaged about $318 each. You remember in Fahrenheit 9/11 when Bush told a tuxedoed and pearled group of rich donors that some people call you the elite, I call you my base? Well, he's rewarded that base handsomely, and he just doesn't care about the rest of us. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let's go to Ken in San Francisco. Ken, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. You made a comment just a minute ago about how North Korea didn't develop any nuclear. They weren't progressing on their nuclear technology while Clinton was in office. But remember also it was Iraq that during Clinton's administration that was kicking out the weapons inspectors over and over for 8 years. So on one hand, I can understand.
Well, actually, they didn't kick out the inspectors until 1998. From 1992 till 1991 even, there were regular inspections. And in fact, in 1998, when Iraq did kick out the inspectors, you may recall Clinton sent bombs in Iraq and destroyed all of their last known stocks of WMDs. So you're right, they did kick out inspectors in 1998, and they did play games with them. But really, no one really disputes that more WMDs were destroyed in Bill Clinton's office after the Persian Gulf War than were destroyed even during the Persian Gulf War.
Well, they
but go ahead, make your point.
Well, I agree with you on that, but from what I remember, and you probably know more about this than I do, but I believe that when the weapons inspectors would go to Iraq over and over again, they would be told, well, you can look in this direction, but you can't
That's
look
true.
Over here. You can look over here. And what good does
that was
do?
True in 98, just to be clear. It wasn't in 02, after the threat of force, he let them go anywhere, even in his palaces. But you're absolutely right that in the 90s, that's true. They definitely played games with the inspectors. I agree.
And the point that I was trying to make with all that was, I know North Korea, as far as we know, wasn't developing any nuclear weapon or any nuclear technology under Clinton, but you also have to play it tough sometimes, and I can understand, you know, it became a problem now that we're in Iraq and all that, but I could understand the justification for going in there, and I know you're thinking that it's more destabilized the world since he's gone in there, but there wasn't really, at least in my opinion, there wasn't much of a choice. But,
there's two separate issues there. First of all, with North Korea, They were starting to develop nuclear weapons, and Clinton signed a deal with them. It was a deal heavily criticized by the Republicans.
Right.
But it involved carrots as well as sticks. It involved food aid and other things to let's face it, a nasty dictator. But in return, he allowed inspectors, including 24-hour surveillance cameras, in his nuclear facilities, and he didn't develop anything for that time. Now, I'm not sure why you think we had to go into Iraq, but why don't you tell me?
Well, I think that we didn't really have a choice. I think that when we stopped the first Persian Gulf War into the first Bush, we made a deal with Iraq. We said we aren't going to invade Baghdad. We are going to stop the war if you'll agree to certain concessions. One was 2 no-fly zones, and one was searching for weapons of mass destruction, which the whole world knew that he'd used. And they continually violated the 2 no-fly zones. And, again, they would say, well, you can look in this area, but you can't look in that area. If you were in charge of the United States and it was your job to be basically the protector of the free world, first of all, that would add some suspicion. And sometimes isn't it better to play safe than think, well, they violated their agreement, but maybe we should play the nice guy.
Well, let me put it this way, Ken. I think there's a huge difference between doing nothing and calling an all-out war and ending up with the deaths of 1 million civilians and 4,000 coalition troops. There is a difference. There is a difference between, the nuclear button and a fly swatter, okay?
Sure.
Yes, Saddam Hussein did try to shoot down of our planes on some of the no-fly zones, he did play with our inspectors in the 90s. That's true. I don't dispute that. The way to respond, it seems to me, was the way we were responding with sanctions, which were severely hurting Iraq. Again, some on the left say we shouldn't have done that. Not me. I supported the sanctions against Saddam Hussein helping the Kurds develop an independent state in the north. There were all kinds of ways we could do it. But the problem is when you do a full-scale war for what were really relatively minor violations, it's not just that it causes the whole world to mistrust you, which it certainly does. It also takes all of your resources, and unless we have a draft, it is literally virtually the entire army is in Iraq, and then other places like North Korea and Iran, and not just those two nations. Saudi Arabia has been dangerous. They get more powerful because we're concentrating all our force, swatting a fly. Saddam Hussein's violations, such as they were not that severe, in my view.
It's easy for us to say, in the safety, but when you look at the way that his people were mistreated, if you talk to many Iraqis that are over here in the United States, I don't know if they'd necessarily agree with you. And then the other thing, I know you're talking about the sanctions and all that, but you look at how successful our sanctions were against Russia when they invaded Afghanistan. I don't know if it really did a lot of good, and I think a lot of people would say that was too soft of an approach.
Well, two things. One, in terms of, I have talked with a lot of Iraqis in the United States, what they tell me is they were not fans of Saddam Hussein by any stretch. And by the way, most Saudis are not fans of their government. Most Egyptians are not fans of their government. Most Syrians are not fans of their government. Most Iranians are not fans of their government. But okay, they didn't like their government. They were glad to see him removed. But then they said, America, you removed him. Okay, you're done. Now leave. Why didn't you leave in 03 or 04 or 05 or 06? And now most Iraqis I've talked to will tell you life is worse in Iraq now than it was under Saddam Hussein. They've had up to 1 million civilians killed, 1 million exiled. It's hard to know the exact numbers, I admit, but it's clearly hundreds of thousands. And there's a difference between living under a dictator, which is not good, and I don't support, and all-out chaos, which is worse.
And I agree with you, except remember one thing. Who is the one that's causing a lot of the chaos?
Today it does.
Well, I disagree.
Because we occupy the country, all right, it leads to a place where al-Qaeda can come in and Iran can come in and all these outside interests that, frankly, would not be allowed in by the Iraqis but are there to foment a Shia-Sunni divide. And all because it's all justified by people's minds because Iraq is under occupation. If we were to leave, then I can't say I know exactly what would happen. I don't promise that I do. But at least the excuse of us as occupier would be gone, and maybe the Iraqi people could take this into their own hands and work it out for themselves.
Regardless of whether or not we should have gone in there, being there now, do you advocate then advocate leaving and then creating a complete vacuum, or doing what we're doing now? You know,
I think maybe the Democrats have the best idea. They use the word redeploying rather than leaving. I think we should definitely get rid of, not have any permanent military bases, and get rid of the huge palatial structures that make us look worse than Saddam Hussein, that were occupying the center of Baghdad's green zone. Now, if the Iraqi government wants a few troops to stay on the border to protect from infiltration, I'm okay with that kind of very small, limited thing where we're not involved in people's lives, we're not going into people's homes, you know, that kind of border guard, if the United Nations comes in as sort of a peacekeeping. I'm okay with a very small, I'm not saying every last troop has to go, but clearly we have to stop being an occupying force, because while we're there, the Iraqi people don't want us there. And they see us, frankly, as a foreign dictator, which the only thing worse than a home-born dictator, Saddam Hussein, for them is a foreign dictator. And I always use, Ken, the example of the American Revolution. We were very happy, George Washington was, to have the French help us fight against the British. We were very, very – we needed them. They were very useful at Yorktown. But if the French had come onto American soil, invaded, and said, we are freeing you from the British, and we're going to put you under French occupation to free you from the evil British, I think Americans would have said, thanks, France, but no thanks. You can help us free ourselves from the yoke of the British, but we don't want to be under your rule either. And I think that's what Iraqis are saying.
I agree, except we're the ones that did give them the right to vote. When you're saying dictatorship, it sounds really awful. We're giving them the right to vote, and we're doing everything, in my opinion, everything that we can to leave. We don't, I truly believe, we don't want to stay there. We want to get out as quickly and as cleanly as possible, but it's not because of us that we can't get out. It's because of the people there, the terrorists that are keeping us there.
Well, hold on. When you say you're convinced we want to go out, do you know about all the military bases that we're building there, huge, permanent military bases? I mean, I've even heard some neoconservatives admit that ever since Osama bin Laden insisted that we leave Saudi Arabia, we left Saudi Arabia tail between our legs. That's given into terrorism. And that we needed another place to have our military bases. So bingo, Iraq.
Well, I'll disagree with you on a couple points. But on the military base itself, what choice would we have? We have to have a troop surge. We were being defeated because we were trying to fight a war half-heartedly, and we're trying to get out, and the only way that we can get out is to knock out the terrorists and the disease that's trying to keep us there, we have to get out that way. When we, at least in my opinion, and I'm not a military person, but in my opinion, we're building the bases, we're going to give them back to the Iraqis, and we're going to leave them in fine shape without a dictator, with hopefully free elections. And hopefully we'll be able to leave sometime soon and give them the freedoms that they haven't had in years.
It's amazing to me, I think, how we can look at the same situation and come with two completely different versions of reality. The Iraqi people don't think, except for the Kurds in the north, and I realize they're an exception, and I support an independent Kurdish state, but in the Shia and the Sunni part of Iraq, which is, you know, the lower 80-90% of Iraq, they will tell you overwhelmingly that they don't want Americans there. They don't trust us there. They don't want to be under American occupation. If this is, quote, freedom, unquote, they don't want it. They want to be in control of their own lives. If, frankly, the exact same arguments you're making were made in Vietnam. Oh, we're giving the Vietnamese people democracy and so forth. They didn't want us there either.
Right.
Apparently, people would prefer to be ruled by their own dictators than by Americans purporting to give them freedom. When in essence what we're doing is trying – this is not exactly freedom. I mean, we are putting a lot of pressure on the Iraqi government. You know, sign oil contracts with our corporations, allow us to have permanent military bases, do this, do that, do the other. It's hardly a pure democracy when they're taking orders from our generals.
Well, yes and no. The Iraqi government doesn't automatically agree with everything that the United States says, and you know that too. But
yes.
What choice were there now? And I know you said that you agree with the Democratic platform. I hope you don't agree with the timeline where we have to say, well, we're going to tell our enemies, by the way, we're going to be leaving on this day. So
who are our enemies, Ken?
Who are our enemies? The people that
who's fighting
us
in Iraq?
Stay there. The suicide bombers, the people that are doing everything that they... Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the goal of the suicide bombers?
I think it's to humiliate the Americans and to destabilize the Iraqi government that's trying to get a foothold in the government.
What now? What if you look at it for just a second and take back to my hypothetical of the French that invade the United States in 1700s to protect us from the British. If Americans are trying to kill the French troops, okay, would they also be just terrorists trying to destabilize the country and trying to stop democracy, or would they be nationalists who are just saying, hey, get off our land?
Well, if the Americans were going out of their way to kill other Americans to hurt the French, I think that they would be terrorists. Because if the Iraqis
were
doing everything
they No, I mean the French didn't occupy our country, obviously, but if you study the American Revolution, you know that a substantial portion of the population, called the Tories, people don't like to talk about it, but the American Revolution was in many ways a civil war. There were a lot of British loyalists in the colonies, and we did treat them pretty rudely, including killing them and so forth. I mean, that's what happens in such a case. So it's really not that different. I think these are – look, I don't deny that al-Qaeda is trying to get a foothold and Iran is trying to get a foothold. But I think they are a small portion. I think the great majority of people fighting us in Iraq are simply nationalists who want to control their own country. Now, they may be Shia nationalists fighting Sunni nationalists too. I don't doubt that civil war, incipient civil war, is growing. But what I really think is that if you want to get rid of al-Qaeda and Iranian influence in Iraq, the best way to do it is for us to leave, because then the Iraqis are fighting themselves, if they're fighting at all. And frankly,
but it's a
cyclical
argument. If the terrorism stops, Mark, then we know that the country is going to be stable, we're going to be out of there. But there was
barely any terrorism when we first came in. No, wait, hold on here. Ken, when we first came in there, right, the first 2 months, there were very few attacks on Americans. This has only grown over 4 years of occupation.
Right. No. I understand. I understand that the bombings, the terrorism, has been growing. But again, my point is, though, people going out of their way, and I would feel the same way about the American Revolution. If people went out of their way to kill innocent children and people trying to you know, lining up for police jobs, things like that, going out of their way to kill innocents, of course, I would think that the Americans would be, going back to your hypothetical, would be terrorists.
It depends on who we're talking about here. Look, if we're talking about people lining up to be policemen, I think you can understand. If we had people lining up in America to help the British Army, there might be attacks on them. As far as innocents, yes.
The British Army is different than the police. The military is different than the police.
I don't know. I guess it was the British military that confiscated the guns at Lexington and Concord, not the police. I'm not sure, but at the heart of this issue, yes, there are people that do atrocities in Iraq. Okay, they bomb mosques, they kill innocent people. Frankly, a lot of those are al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was not in Iraq prior to our invasion. They are there now, and they are killing people in order to foment civil war. I recognize that, but let me suggest to you that their tactics would not work if we were not there. If American troops weren't there, and al-Qaeda came in and blew up a mosque, the entire anger of the Iraqi people would be directed at al-Qaeda rather than at the United States. It's only because of the anarchy caused by our troops that allows the terrorists to succeed. I don't think the Iraqi people support al-Qaeda. I don't think the Iraqi people support Iran. They're turning to these much more evil people purposely because they're seen as the only people who can fight the United States of America. We are driving Iraq into the hands of our enemies, is I guess what I'm trying to say in one sentence. But I appreciate talking with you.
Well, thank you, Mark. I love your show, and thank you.
I appreciate your calling in and giving me your point of view. And folks, listen, don't hesitate to disagree with me. That's what this show is all about. I just had Dave disagree with me from the left, if you will, and Ken disagree with me from the right. That's okay. That's what this is about. This is about dialogue. And I think it's important for you to hear the people who disagree with me, if only to understand the different arguments. And you may agree with me, you may not, but at least you should understand where I'm coming from and how at least I hope I can back up what I can say. We only got a few minutes left, and there's still a lot to talk about. I'll talk more about this stuff tomorrow, actually. We can do a week in review part two. One thing I do want to mention before we leave, though, today's show, is the hundreds of documents found in Vice President Cheney's office relating to warrantless surveillance. Now, we've talked about surveillance before here, and we've talked about the testimony of James Comey and how the president sent Alberto Gonzalez to try to trick a very sick John Ashcroft into breaking the law when everyone at the Justice Department agreed that what he wanted to do was so illegal, so unconstitutional, that everyone was going to resign. But Senator Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has, as you're probably aware, subpoenaed documents. He wants to know what the law is. The president has apparently signed secret document after secret document, secret executive order after secret executive order. We know, in fact, that there are 43 separate authorizations from President Bush on how to spy on the American people, and they're all secret. And Congress has a right to determine what the program is, what the law is, what Bush is doing. So they've demanded the documents, and Fielding, Bush's lawyer, wanted an extension. So he got an extension, and then he wanted another extension. So he got another extension, and he wanted another extension. Three, four, five extensions later, we're going month after month after month, and it's clear that these extensions are just ways of saying, you know, we can't tell you no, so we just need more time. Why can't they tell them no? Well, it's interesting, because there is a claim for executive privilege on some of the U.S. prosecutor stuff, because it involves the way people talk with the president prior to making a plan. All right, you at least have an argument on there. But this isn't argument. This isn't executive privilege. These aren't discussions with advisors. This is United States policy. There is no executive privilege when it comes to complete U.S. policy. All Congress is asking is, what is U.S. policy? Who are we spying on? And the most interesting thing about it is that the documents, which are so secret that Congress is told they can't see them, found their way into Vice President Cheney's office, who they admitted has no real constitutional right to see any of this. Now we know who's running the government. I'm afraid that's all for today. Tune in tomorrow for more of the Inside Scoop. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Hurricane Dean struck Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula this morning as a powerful Category 5 storm. Dean has now been downgraded to a Category 1 hurricane and is expected to grow and make landfall again on Wednesday along the Mexican coast. President Bush is in Canada today for the Quebec summit, meeting with Canadian and Mexican leaders. The heads of state have agreed on a mutual strategy to avoid crippling delays in border crossings during emergency situations, such as a terrorist attack or a natural disaster. Russian military officials want the Czech Republic to postpone a decision to accept a U.S. radar station. Moscow views the proposed missile intercept system as a threat and told Prague it would be making, quote, a big mistake if it agreed to the plan, and has urged them to wait until another U.S. president is elected before they decide. In Huntington, Utah, federal and mine officials are quickly losing optimism in the efforts to rescue the 6 miners trapped in a collapsed mine over 2 weeks ago. Efforts to reach the miners have resulted in no signs of life, insufficient oxygen supply, and the death of 3 rescue workers. 3 weeks before the long-awaited Iraq War report to Congress, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq has unusually strong words of criticism for the new government. Ambassador Ryan Crocker called progress on the national level in Iraq, quote, extremely disappointing and frustrating to all concerned. At a Quebec press conference today, President Bush expressed his frustration in Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. The president said that it is up to the Iraqi people, not American politicians, to decide whether to support the prime minister. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has set to rest speculation that he will throw his hat in the 2008 presidential ring. Bloomberg said today that he cannot win and will not run. The 65-year-old billionaire fueled rumors of a campaign by traveling the country recently to push his agenda. Reuters reports the number 2 man at the Pentagon has produced a memo establishing 25 goals to be